Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Going to look at a color classic today, Ed. But before we do, let's talk color.
Let's talk new black and white classics, man, by way of Red Room. Issue 1 and 2 are available for pre-order right at this moment. I get there to the Fantagraphics website by way of my link tree in the description below. First issue has been reserved by thousands of people. I think it'll be fun to see if I could get thousands of people to reserve issue 2 as well before these things even hit the shops, man. Each issue is self-contained. You see a cover you like, grab the comic, read the interiors. Issue 2 introduces the first big Poker Face story. There are people who have tattoos of Poker Face already, so I think that's going to be the Boba Fett of Red Room. Once again, every comic is self-contained, pulpy horror classic. And if you want to read the comics ahead of time, patreon.com/edpiskor is where you can check the stuff out. And this is at a high enough resolution. People have been printing up and making bootlegs.
By popular demand. When people are making their own print editions, you know it's wanted.
Yeah, it's super cool, man.
You can join me on patreon.com/jimrug. Lots of process, original art, behind-the-scenes stuff, notes. And right now, I am doing a comparison piece, a series that goes through these two comics. This is Street Angel Lost Dog, the first Image Street Angel comic I made. It was never officially published, but it was redone 3 years later as Street Angel's Dog. So I love to compare and contrast these kind of things. We've done that with several comics on the channel. And this series that I'm doing is basically going through. It's a way to look at process, a different way to look at process, where you're looking at two different styles, two different interpretations, and talk and shop. And there's lots of behind-the-scenes stuff. I include scripts with the pages, sketches, things of that nature. So you can find all of that and follow me at patreon.com/jimrug. We're here today, Ed, to talk about The Outsiders Annual number 1 by Mike Barr and Kevin Nolan. This is from 1986. And what we're really here to talk about is the coloring. Kevin Nolan colors his own art on this series. This is Baxter paper, something that, you know, publishers were starting to shift to. Baxter paper was white. It's kind of a coated stock. It completely handled color and ink differently. And this is one of those early examples where the colorist was conscious of this and was making choices using colors that usually weren't used in the Marvel DC 64 color palette, because he recognized this reproduces differently. What do I do with that? One of the first differences that I will note is the blacks are black. Right. Whenever they're printing on newsprint for decades, that newsprint's pulpy. The letterpresses were different than the offset, and the blacks were just uneven. They were gray. There were bits of paper showing through. It handled color completely differently. Plus, the newsprint was yellow. It was off-white, which changed the way the colors looked.
Yeah, or even kind of a little gray when it first came out, to be honest.
It really affected the way these colors printed, the way they looked on the actual paper. And whenever you change that paper stock and you change the printing technology, everything, those colors are totally different than what you would get if you had this on newsprint.
Yeah, the cool thing about newsprint and having that kind of yellow quality, certainly as the paper ages, it's even more kind of beautiful. What it would almost act as is kind of like a fine art, like an underpainting.
Yes.
So when you have that kind of undertone, you could almost put any colors on the page and they all merge well because they have some piece of that yellow underneath, that some piece of that gray underneath. Now you have white. The yellow is divorced from the blue completely. There's nothing tying it together. How do you make that work?
Yeah, and you can see Nolan trying from the very beginning. You see the black, or you see the blue saturated in the foreground arm of Batman. That blue's not even on his background arm.
Yeah.
Because it's that thing of like trying to make the most out of this palette, which now will reproduce, I don't know if more accurately is the word, but certainly more saturated.
Yeah, here's another piece that I'll make note of too, that we'll see a lot here. A lot of white. A lot of highlight on the figures. Now we know, you know, Batman has the gray outfit, but he's opted to use these Zippitones in the back, so he's not letting this gray value, which might be pretty close to these gray values, touch and marry. He'll let this one touch because he knows that this like 70% gray is not going to clash against, you know, that 20-30% gray value. So he'll like let this white highlight kind of separate the forms there. But you're going to see him use a lot of white throughout this whole book.
Yeah, man, the screen tone on this spread is incredible. You know, he's doing these gradations in the background that are different than the gradations in these giant faces in the background.
The production process of this part is incredible because Zipitone did not make 11 by 17 screens. So they definitely didn't make, you know, 22 by 17 inch Zipitone screens. So he has to make sure that when he's cutting them out, like that he's placing the same values like pretty close together. Like that's not...
Last part of the creative team, because Nolan is doing art and color, so it's a small team. Todd Klein on lettering.
Yeah, beautiful lettering.
Always happy to see him.
Mike Barr, just a quick note on that. You know, that writer, Mike Barr, nobody talks about him anymore, but he's one of, like, Brando. He could have been a contender. He worked with Nolan here. Batman Year 2 with Todd McFarlane, Alfredo Alcala, Camelot 3000, Brian Bolland. Like, he worked with heavy hitters, man, but it just, his name doesn't come up in the conversation anymore.
I'm glad you mentioned Camelot 3000. I almost pulled that. That was DC's first publication on Baxter paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I read an interview with Nolan where he talks about, you got to adjust the palette so you don't blind your readers.
Right.
Camelot 3000, they didn't adjust the palette.
No.
So it's I probably should have dug one out to compare, but super bright. This is interesting to me. The first, this first page with captions, there's from a deep blue to bottomless black, tones of gray, splash of red. This is in the captions that they're pulling out all of these different colors. Is that coincidence? Like, what a happy accident.
They wanted to work together. If you read the piece in the back, they were trying to figure out how they could get a chance to work together. And someone tells me they were working pretty closely. Once again, separating like this green of this outfit with the kind of greenish blue of the back by just having that little piece of white up there.
Yeah, and Nolan, in an interview in Comics Comics, which I think you can still find online if you Google it, talks about how like these kind of subtleties, you know, like that greenish blue background and then like a green jacket and an olive green pants, subtleties were discouraged with the old coloring process, and with this new process, you had to lean into those. And so you see lots of that where it's almost monochromatic in panels, but it's still like three or four colors.
Can you just go back real quick? Because like one of my favorite pieces really is this. It feels like the Bruce Timm cartoon in a way, where like the white is selling us on the focal point right there. It's such a small piece that Nolan wants you to see. So he's literally pointing to what he wants you to see with the blue right there. It's good.
I do this in some of my coloring, where if you throw in your 100% yellow on this kind of paper, it's almost neon. You know, it's so bright.
Yeah, expect 100% yellow to be the brightest color. So if you're going to use it intelligently.
And then whenever you want to do some red, that might be the first pure red, even though they reference red, but it's kind of this, you know, like a maroon in different places. How much does it pop whenever you decide to use it for blood? There's your hot sky, putting a little bit of yellow into that sky. Still doing color holds and stuff. You know, your 100% cyan visible there.
All this white. Like the white is as important as any other color.
Yeah, he's using that for sure. And I wonder if that's a result of recognizing that suddenly black is on your page.
Yeah, maybe.
And that subtlety thing, too, is, I think you see it in the white where it's like, let me highlight things. You know.
Look at the inking on
add
that.
Add a little more that's dimensionality. Yeah, that inking is
a lot of reference, I think, Nolan uses, man. Like, I see a lot of postures and a lot of drapery and stuff that I feel like you just can't make that up.
Yeah, well, Kevin, come on and straighten us out. Yeah, tell us about this process in greater detail.
Yeah, don't be shy.
More of the color holds here with the red this time. That's pretty bold because that, I don't think, is magenta. Usually when you see a color hold, it's one ink color. But
yeah.
I think that might be two. I think that's a yellow and a magenta together.
It just doesn't have to be with this process because the dots are so close together.
Oh, man. Color hold within the color field. That's really pretty.
And it's analogous color. Like, you don't see anything but the white of the dialogue bubble as being anything other than the cool color.
Right. And that's a good call. I would also point out, like you mentioned, the grays and Batman in that opening spread. using a range of grays unheard of for newsprint comics. Like, you almost couldn't even use gray. You know, there was one gray that you could pull out if you wanted to, and here we see, like, lots of these kinds of approaching gray.
This is such a jobber team, man.
Yeah, I can't name this team.
They're so stupid.
Geoforce.
Yeah, it's Geoforce. So shadows of the trees on that ground, man, and then yellow, right, on grass. That's as wild as don't use sky blue for your sky.
Like, yeah, it's super awesome.
Like yellow on grass.
I think this is a good example of that's using subtle shades. You know, you see the gray blue kind of navy color, the actual, I think that's 100% cyan, and then color holds and light blues in the screen. It's all blues. You know, it's blues and grays. It's all this cool background. Even the figures are white in a very light screen of cyan. I mean, that's practically monochromatic, but quite a range. This kind of stuff is where it shines too.
Yeah.
I would love to see what this would look like if you saw the newsprint version, because I have a feeling this is all just mud. Mud and dark.
Right, yeah. I mean, this is, you know, it's a Caucasian, like, flesh face. And it's real easy in this 64 color process, because you just bump up the cyan level a little bit. And I wonder if there's some version of that being applied here to that face to make that happen.
One of the places you see a lot of that subtlety that he's talking about, these subtle changes, will be backgrounds. And then he puts his figures out with much more saturation. You know, the cyan and black lightning there, the green and yellows in Geoforce. But they pop so much because of these subtle backgrounds. And it worked really well, I think, for superhero comics. And then when you really want something, let's go with 100% magenta. You know, like, look at how much that panel stands out on the page or on a spread. The yellow, too. Whenever you decide you're going to have a hot spot, it just leaps off of the page. It's really an interesting tool, I think, using color this way whenever you're composing, like, two-page spreads or you know, full pages and then just really drawing attention to something.
That right there is incredible.
I wonder how much of this stuff he's, like, trying. Because, you know, these interviews that you read with these guys when they talk about craft, he talks about cutting hand separations for, like, the Fantagraphics work that he would do. So he knows this stuff, you know, really well, like all these different processes. And I feel like whenever he gets to try something a little bit new, some of these panels are probably him experimenting having an idea that you just couldn't do, you know, before.
This might be one of my favorite drawn panels.
That's
here.
A fun panel.
Feels like a Jaime kind of panel. I think I've seen Jaime do that a couple of times.
Yeah. That's a really great sequence, too, to then have to see them climbing through that hole after he punched a hole in the wall. I had to make a note here because time for me to take a powder.
Yeah.
It's purely a wrestling phrase. That guy's ducking out.
Yes, he is. The magenta's at work there against a gray blue of Batman.
Yeah, it's so let's funny. Do some action.
You read the back matter about how, like, they wanted, like, Kevin Nolan was like, I want to make a Batman story. Poor Kevin, man. Like,
yeah, doesn't get a lot.
Yeah, has to work with these jobber characters.
I love this color. This green that's coming out of the hallway and is like the accent color on this ochre. Man.
You would never think to use that.
Not in a million years. And how much does Black Lightning stand out whenever it's all these yellows and greens wrapped around them, wrapped around the blue. And then it's great whenever you see it as like, that's your page, that's your scene, you know.
Right.
And then moving on to the next space. It's very good for distinguishing we're in a different location here.
It really is. And then just using like the light blues there, it feels gaseous. In there, it feels like atmospheric using those colors.
Yeah, you see the white coming in again.
Yeah,
and here he's using white totally different than say a highlight
or
something.
It's a fact. Yeah, it's a cloud. It's vapor.
Yeah, I think you make a good call with that white. I have to imagine that's him recognizing the black as like, we're gonna have some dark blacks on this page.
So we've seen him do like color hold vapor, and now here's like ink line vapor and ink clouds, some color clouds.
You can see a range on this on Cobra as well with the yellow, the shadow yellow, the white highlight, and the green, you know, like behind him, whatever that is.
Some rim lighting.
some kind of effect. Same deal here. The magenta just really popping. Big contrast. Makes the pages look great. But that's what this comic is this revelation of like, okay, we're entering a different coloring phase for comics. How do we make that work? And this is one of the first examples where it really is a thoughtful colorist trying some things that are different than your typical comic and making it work. And I wonder with some of the previous stuff, I mentioned Camelot 3000, you burn your retinas out. I wonder if they even knew it was going to be on Baxter paper. You know, if they're just building a comic and then at some point through the process, it's updated to Baxter paper and it's printed and then you're like, whoa.
You're very diplomatic, Jimmy. There was that How to Color Comics, the Marvel Way video we did, man.
Make no mistake, I'm insulting DC's production process here.
Where the colorists all talked about the Baxter paper, and they were all like, we're still trying to figure it out. Like, none of them were happy with any of their color jobs on any of that stuff. And they all kind of mea culpa in that piece. Just like, it's a learning process, you know, we're trying to figure it out.
Well, here's your color Rosetta Stone.
That's it.
And I think, you know, I've talked to enough cartoonists about this book to know that lots of us feel that way. Like, this really was a revelatory piece of, like, this is how to do it, you know? And you can see, like, again, with the subtleties, there's four or five yellows in this awesome sunset scene, and it plays. It looks great.
It's a cutting-edge production process, and they call it cutting-edge because there will be blood. And this is a guy who escaped a lot of pitfalls. And good for you, Kevin. You escaped the pitfalls, and now we're not going to have Baxter paper anymore next year. it's over. We're going glossy, baby.
Yeah, it's a good point, Ed. I mean, like, now it's all kind of moot having this conversation at all, in a way, because the process is so different today. But it's cool looking through the stacks and finding these examples of, like, that's a different looking comic, and it looks great.
Yeah, it really does, man. I mean, just go grab any of those Legion of Superheroes comics that were coming out at this time that were on that Baxter paper, and compare and contrast, like, it's night and day. And those comics were colored by great colorists. Like, I think it might have been like Tatiana Wood or somebody, and you know, you look at her Swamp Things,
yeah,
incredible. But
yeah,
but that
cool
Baxter stuff,
it's a tricky mistress.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's all I've got here. You know, I would look at more comics that I feel are like high points in coloring. So hopefully this will be the first of several of these investigations down some noteworthy, interesting looking comics.
Easy to do, man. Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available.
Join me on my Patreon at patreon.com/JimRugg to see lots of my production stuff, behind the scenes material, original art, notes, and now comparisons between a couple of comics that I had to make twice.
Red Room issue 1 and 2 are forthcoming and can both be pre-ordered right now. Thousands of people have done so already for issue 1. Let's get those issue 2 numbers up there, man. Link in the description below from my link tree will take you to Fantagraphics website so that you could do that. Also, patreon.com/EdPisker. You're going to be able to read these comics ahead of time if you like.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on, and it is shaping up to be a busy 2021.
Yes, sir. What you got going on?
Almost got me. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video as well.
Jimmy, give them one more set of marching orders, man. We got stuff to do.
Read more comics.